So before we dive into bringing a few things out of our passage from today, I just want us to stop and just recognize the kind of lay of the land, if you like, from the chapters that we're in at the moment. There's this kind of very distinct section where Jesus is talking all about the end times. He's talking all about what is coming ahead in the future. It starts off, it seems, with Jesus and his disciples in Jerusalem, and they're near the temple. And at one point, they're kind of walking away from the temple, having been in there, and someone turns around and looks at the temple and looks at it and says to Jesus, "Oh, look at the temple. Isn't that amazing? Look at the building work. Look at the precious stones in the temple. Isn't that incredible?" And you can almost, I can almost, as I read it, see Jesus' head going into his hands. And he's like, "Have you not been listening to anything I've been saying? I'm not here to tell you about buildings. I'm not here to tell you about a temple. I'm here to tell you about something that's so much deeper and so much greater than that. Don't you know that that temple isn't even going to be standing in a few decades' time? It's nothing. It's not meaningless because God set it up and we know that it has value and purpose, and it's a picture of so many amazing realities. But Jesus came to bring so much more than just a building. Hill City Church, take note as we possibly enter a building project. Jesus came to give so much more than a building. And if all we have is a building, we've got nothing, nothing at all. And so we need to know that. But anyway, Jesus tells them, "Look, I've come to talk about this inward work by my Spirit that's going to change you from the inside out. Not just that you go to a building and tick it off your list and you've been religious, but I want to change your whole life from the inside out." And so he tells them, this temple's not going to be there forever. It's going. It's going pretty soon, actually. And then they begin to ask him, "So when's this going to happen?" They ask all the questions that you and me would definitely have asked, because we ask these questions, don't we? When, why, how? Tell me everything. Tell me all the gossip. I want to know everything about this stuff you're talking about. And Jesus tells them a bit. So at the beginning of chapter 24 that we've been through in a couple of sessions, Jesus essentially talks to them and gives them some of the events that are going to lead up to his return. That's the big thing that's coming. At the end of time, Jesus is coming back. He's going to wrap everything up. He'll have built his church. He'll set up his kingdom. We'll be with him forever. Glorious, amazing. Look forward to it. That is happening. But what Jesus does is he gives them some of the things that are going to happen. And so some things we read, Jesus says, rumors of wars and earthquakes and that kind of stuff. We can look across the world and we can say, well, it's happening. Jesus got it right. And we know, because Jesus got it right, because he always gets it right, because his word never fails, that the rest is going to happen. And then Jesus starts talking about some more radical stuff. He starts talking about tribulations. He starts talking about him coming down on the clouds and signs in heaven and all this mad stuff. And he says, all this is going to happen. So we haven't seen that as far as we know, but it is going to happen because his word never, ever fails. But then Jesus makes this really clear point. Even though I've told you a few bits and pieces of what's going to happen and what you're going to see, he basically is telling them, as far as I can see, but don't get obsessed with that. So many Christians mess that up. He says, don't be obsessed with what is going to happen and how it's going to happen. Whether he tells people not to write series of books on it, I don't know. I'm not here to judge that. But he definitely says, you don't know. You don't know what's going to happen fully. I've given you a couple of pointers, but actually that day is going to come like a thief in the night. And what thief tells the person he's going to burgle when he's going to be breaking in through the back window? Doesn't happen. It just happens when you're not expecting. In fact, the thief is trying to catch you off your guard. And although Jesus isn't trying to catch us off our guard, he's going to. He's going to. And that's why I say we haven't seen some of that stuff as far as we know. It might have happened and we missed it because we're a bit dull. Isn't it? That's the truth. We don't know. It could happen tomorrow. It could all have taken place. We've misread it. Jesus is going to burst through the clouds tomorrow. And that would be epic. We'd miss out on life skills, but hey, I don't think we'd care. So we're not going to know. Jesus is telling us, don't be obsessed with that stuff. I love the picture, don't you, of when Jesus went back to heaven. And what did the disciples do when Jesus goes back up to heaven? They literally just stand there, looking up at the clouds. And Jesus is effectively telling us here, as the angels tell the disciples, stop looking at the clouds. Nothing wrong with clouds. but you've got work to do, right? You've got stuff to get on with. You've got a life to live that I've given you, and you've got a world to save. There's a lot to be getting on with, right? So don't be obsessed with when and how and why and if and where, buts and what, whatever. Any question you can come up with. Just take what Jesus says here, face value. Some stuff's happening. It is going to take place. Now let's get on with living our lives. So in the context of that, Jesus tells four stories. Four stories. And I'm going to kind of talk about three of them. Even though one of them was in my text from last time, I'm going to talk about three of them today because they kind of link together. And then whoever's preaching next week, which I'm not sure who it is actually, has got the fourth one, which is quite practical actually. It's very similar, but it's a story talking about what we need to be doing while we're waiting for Jesus to come back. So four stories. And I'm going to start with the middle one, if that's all right. I know that isn't logical, but get over it. So the parable of the 10 virgins is what it's called in my Bible. And we all know the story, don't we? Two sets of virgins waiting for this wedding. The bridegroom's going to come. They got these lamps. Part of the ceremony or whatever is that for them to carry these lamps in. And we've got half of them are foolish and half of them are wise. Half of them are wise because they get their oil. They get it ready. And they're not sure when the bridegroom's coming. He's been delayed. I guess it happens all over the world. Not the bridegroom here, is it? It's the bride, but there you go. They're ready, though. Whenever he's going to come, it doesn't matter because they've got what they need. And then you've got the other foolish ones, the five who didn't bother getting any oil. They're not ready. They're not ready. If he turns up now, it's too late. There's nothing they can do, as the story kind of tells us. And really, this story is telling us something really simple, isn't it? Really, really simple. What is Jesus telling us about waiting for his return? He's telling us, be faithful now. Don't put it off. Don't wait for something to happen in your life or in the world or in your church. Be faithful now. Do it now. Now, I made myself laugh this week. I really did. Because all of us know that we have this whole thing in Hill City Church, don't we, about basically being late and being pretty disorganized. And if I'm really honest with you, I get a bit fed up because we keep making jokes about it and it's not always that funny, really. But it is what it is. And I had this day this week where I was sat down. I was actually at McDonald's waiting to go pick the kids up because it just worked better. I was in Cardiff and stopped there. Not that I have to justify being in McDonald's, but that's basically what I'm doing. So I was in McDonald's and I was thinking through some of the stuff to do with funding and the building and that kind of thing. And it kind of popped into my mind that there was this fund from the FIEC, which is a group of churches that we belong to. And I was like, oh, I haven't thought about that for a while. I intended to apply for it. Let's check the information, make sure the closing date. And I had in my head that the closing date for applications was sometime in the new year. And I started to Google it and search for it. And I started clicking on the links. And the links were dead. And I thought, all right, they lost the money or something. What's going on? And I eventually got to the right place. And it told me that the closing date for applications was last Friday. But it's one of those laugh or you cry, isn't it, basically? And I really cracked myself up because I was just like, all these churches in the FIEC, probably weeks, if not months ago, have all got their applications in. And here's Hill City Church. We haven't done it. And we're gonna kind of stroll in a week late and say, can we still put this in, please? I made myself laugh. I really did, and I'm. It's not good. It is what it is. but I didn't mean to do that. That's what makes me laugh. I didn't mean to do that. I didn't mean to be classic Hill City Church and when we're going to send our application to this funding in. It just happened. It's just, I don't know. My mind does funny things. I'm learning. The older I get, and I appreciate I'm not that old yet, but the older I get, I can't do lastminute.com very well anymore. When I was younger, you're more on the ball and you can do the last minute thing and pull it off. Now I just forget stuff and leave it to the last minute and you forgot it and it's too late. Why am I telling you this? Pray for me. I'm telling you this because there's only one antidote to the lastminute.com thing. And do you know what that is? Do it now, right? That's the only way I can fix it. And I say it quite often. Someone says, oh, will you do this for me? I have to do it now or it won't happen. Right? Isn't that true? I know that's not the only antidote. You could write a note to yourself, post it on the back of your hand, whatever, tie a knot in your hanky. There's other tactics. But for the most part, it's just do it now. Do you know what? That's what Jesus is telling us. Do it now. Do it now. Don't wait. Don't put it off. Don't think there'll be a better day. Don't think that things will be different and then it'll be okay. Be faithful now. Whatever that looks like, whatever it means, you've got to get it done, because then you might end up with a McDonald's moment where you're like, oh, too late. And with some things in life, you can't go back. I don't even know if we can go back now on that grant, to be honest. I emailed Andy and said, can you pull some strings? And he hasn't replied. He's probably in a corner somewhere with his head in his hands going, oh, what have we done? But anyway, sometimes you can't go back. You can't go back. So do it now. Be faithful now. Don't leave it off. Don't put it off. This is so, so important that we have to get it sorted. Okay, so that's the middle story. Two other stories around it are both kind of parables, basically, and two other lessons on what it looks like to be faithful. And I love the kind of contrast in the two stories. So last time we looked at this short story, verses 45 to 51, about a faithful and wise servant. This servant who the master sets over his household, he goes on a long journey and he leaves him in charge and basically says to him, and this is the point, get on with your job. That's all he says. You're the servant. It's your responsibility to make sure people are fed and watered in this place. It's your responsibility to do this and that and the other. He leaves him there and says, get on with your work. Get on with your job. And the faithful one gets on with it. The faithful one does what he's been told to do. And Jesus says the foolish one is one who starts to get drunk and beats fellow servants and stuff like that. And then the master's going to come back when the guy doesn't expect it and is going to punish the unfaithful servant who isn't getting on with what he's been given to do. And the lesson, I talked about this last time, the lesson from that is basically this. Be faithful with what God has put in front of you. Be faithful with what God has given you to do. Be faithful in the place you find yourself right now with the family you have, the job you have, the friends that are close to you, the ministries and church you already serve in and work in. Be faithful with what God has put in front of you. If he gives you opportunities, be faithful with them. If he opens doors, walk through them. The Bible's pretty clear on that. And I love this side of things, because it's very simple to me. When God gives you an opportunity, no one else can open that door. So go through it. We may not always want to, but we need to take it really seriously. When God puts something in our lives, when he gives us an opportunity, when he opens up a place for us to serve or to be used, or even talk about moment by moment, a conversation with someone on the bus or in McDonald's or wherever it is, if he gives opportunities, be faithful with what God has put in front of you, just in the simplicity of it. Whatever God has given you to do, do it to the best of your ability, whatever that means for you. All of us slightly different, all of us different relationships and links in life, and all of us different stuff we do with our days, day by day. Just be faithful with what God has given you to do, right? I love the simplicity of that. And I do, like I said, think we need to take it really seriously. When God opens up a door for you, when he drops something in your lap, that's not by mistake, it's for a reason. When a door is open, the Bible's clear. We had a whole GC on this a few weeks ago. When God opens a door, no one can shut it. And when God shuts a door, no one can open it. So when there's an open door, who's involved? God is involved. So just simply be faithful with what God has given you to do. But there's a second side of this. And again, I love how the second story kind of complements that first one. The servant in the first story is just simply told to do his job. Do the work that I've given you to do. But then what's the second story? We read it, the second half of our passage for today. It's the parable of the talents. Again, we all know the story, don't we? These three men are entrusted by something, again, with their master's goods, basically, as he's going away on a long journey. One's given five, one's given two, and one's given one according to their ability, the text says. So they're not given more than they can handle. They're given what they can cope with. And he basically gives it to them and says, be faithful with it. And so that's the lesson, isn't it, of the parable. We see clearly two of them are faithful with what they've been given. They earn exactly the same amount on top. They're able to give back to their master double what he gave to them. They've made the money work, if you like. And then the one of them isn't faithful. The one of them, for reasons we'll look at in just a second, the one of them decides to just go and bury what his master has given him. Just leave it in the ground. If I do that, it will make sure that it isn't lost. And so I can give it back to him. And the master comes back and, again, we'll think about this more in a second, but he rebukes him basically for hiding that money and not putting it to work and not being able to bring something back to his master when he returns. So what's the lesson of the parable? The lesson is this: be faithful with what God has given you. And I think you can be a bit more creative with this. It's practical, the first one: be faithful with what God has put in front of you. If it's there, it's there. Do it. Do it as best you can. But also, God says to us, be faithful with what I've entrusted you with. Now, that could be different things for all of us, couldn't it? It's a mad thing that it's the parable of the talents, because although that is money, in the context of the parable, it's very easy to translate that, isn't that, straight into English. God has given you talents. He's given you gifts. He's given you a personality. He's given you a kind of gearings in terms of what makes you tick as a person. He's given you time you may feel like he hasn't, but he has given you time in your day, in your week. He's given you money. He's entrusted you with a certain amount of the wealth in the world. He's given you all kinds of stuff, hasn't he? And the message of the parable is this: am I using what God has given me for his glory, for the extension of his kingdom? Not just what are the opportunities in front of me, but am I using the things that he has put within me for the extension of his kingdom? And this is where we do get to dream big, don't we? We get to dream big dreams. What could God do with you and with your gifting? What has he put within you that he may not have put within everyone else? You see, we get confused with that sometimes, don't we, as people? Because God has made us all different. And we think that he's made everyone like us. That's the way we see the world. And we can't help it, can we? When we respond to something, we feel like everyone else should be responding the way that we are. But that isn't the way it is. We're all different. We all tick slightly differently in the way that we see the world, the way that we respond to the world. And so God has put stuff in you that other people don't see. There's problems with this church that you see that I may well not, because I'm different to you. And that's a beautiful thing, but it means that we all need to get off our backsides and contribute, doesn't it? We all have to put in what God has put within us. If we don't, the church misses out. Isn't that an amazing picture of the church in 1 Corinthians? There's a picture of a body, and all of us are a different part of the body. And that's such a simple picture to understand, isn't it? If one part of your body gives up, you lose, don't you? You lose in different ways. If your fingers on one of your hands just decided to give up and not do what they were created for, you lose out. You're not going to be able to live life as well as you want to be able to do. It doesn't work. If your fingers, 1 Corinthians tells us this as well, if your fingers decide they want to be a nose and start trying to smell everything, you lose out. That ain't working very well, right? That's the picture it gives us. And so all of us have been given different gifts, different gearings, and we have something to offer. Small or great, doesn't really matter. You have something to offer. So are you, am I, being faithful with what God has given you? Now, I want to say something quickly as a kind of note on this. Sometimes, I guess, we might feel like our giftings and callings or whatever are not being used. And sometimes I guess we can get frustrated. Now, I want to say that I don't think that's always wrong. That's not always wrong. And I think I kind of identify this personally. I would say that my primary gifting is teaching. and open up the Bible with people. But the reality is there aren't enough people around at the moment who want to study the Bible every moment of every day. And so I don't do that all the time. I would love to. I know I've said this before, but I would love to be doing Bible studies all day, every day. For some people, that might be their idea of, not hell, I shouldn't say it like that, but you know what I mean, right? But that's what I believe I'm gifted at. And I'm doing things right now that I'm not as gifted in as that, because that's just where we're at. Does that make sense? So sometimes your gifting could be frustrated and it might not be wrong. Do you see what I'm saying? But just be aware. Be aware of when doors open. And believe me, if the opportunity comes for another Bible study, I'll be there. Be willing to do it at the drop of a hat. But it doesn't lose the fact that all of us have been given gifts. You've been given something that I need in this body. You've been entrusted with something that, and I be careful with this, but people will say you've been given something that no one else can do. And in a way, that's true. In a way, I don't think it always is, because if you don't bother doing it, God can raise someone else up. He's able to do that. But we're all unique. We're all gifted by God to play a part in bringing something in to the rest of his body. So, just let that settle and let that rest. And think about it. I'm not asking everyone to jump up now and start a new ministry or do a new work. But let the Lord search your heart. What is it? What is it that I have that I'm not giving? What is it that God has given me that I'm not investing in the rest of his body here in Hill City Church? And that could be as simple, and we don't like talking about it, but it could be money. It could be not giving enough. It could be time. Time that you spend for things that are okay, but they're not as useful as giving yourself to a certain ministry or whatever it might be. It might be something totally new, something that we've never done before, that you think, I would love to. Well, talk to us about it. And let's make sure that all of us are being faithful with what God has given us. Because, you know, the end of this parable is quite striking, isn't it? It really is. The end of the parable, hasn't escaped my attention that the end of both the passages I've done in the past couple of sermons have ended with this line about weeping and gnashing of teeth. The consequences of not getting this stuff correct, the parables would tell us, is quite serious. The consequences of not fully being on board with what we sung earlier today, that we need to give everything, the parables will tell us are quite severe. And I'm not saying that because you haven't given this or that or the other and you've held back a certain part, that you're not saved and everything's going to go wrong. But we need to take the warnings seriously, don't we? We need to take the words of Jesus seriously, that we need to get this right. We want, we need, we should be faithful with that which God has given us. But as we finish this morning, I want us to notice the reason why this third servant wasn't faithful. The first two just crack on, don't they, with what they've been given to do. But what's the reason why the third one doesn't? Just trying to find the verse and I've lost it. 24. So he who had received the one talent came forward saying, Master, I knew you to be a hard man, reaping where you did not sow and gathering where you scattered no seed. And then what does it say, beginning of verse 25? So I was afraid. Afraid. Can we not all identify with that? What is it sometimes that stops you doing the things that you kind of know you should do? Fear, right? Fear of what the consequences are going to be. Fear of what's going to happen to you. What is it ultimately? It's the fear of failure. It's the fear of rejection. It's the fear of going back to your master with half a talent, whatever that is. It's the fear of it all going completely wrong, being laughed at, being mocked for what you've tried to do. Isn't that something we can all identify with? This servant doesn't give. He doesn't invest. He isn't faithful with what he's entrusted with by his master, because he's terrified of the consequences if he doesn't get it right. And here's the thing. Isn't that a complete distortion of what his master was really like? Yeah? That's what he gets wrong, right there. What he gets wrong is completely misunderstanding the character of the person who's entrusted him with one talent. And again, we can't ignore these warnings that to do what he did and bury what God has given us is a serious, serious thing. But we need to know that the master isn't like that. That he isn't a master who is going to turn around when you fail and kick you out, right? He isn't going to turn around when you haven't done what other people have done and discipline you for it. He isn't going to do that. He's a perfect master. I called this being faithful in the safety net of grace. The safety net of grace. Because what does our master do? Again, all of us can identify with not standing up, not being there to be counted because we're worried about the consequences of it. We're worried about what's going to happen to us if we mess up and if we don't do a good job. But what does our master do? Number one, he covers our mistakes. So if you're faithful and you start investing and you make a mistake, is God bothered by that? Do you know what I did with that funding thing? That was a mistake. Just a mistake. To my knowledge, there was no sin in it. I just stupid, basically. I made a mistake. And, you know, as Christians, we need to be careful that we see mistakes for what they are. Mistakes. Now, there is a potential that rather than telling that story on a Sunday morning and laughing at it, I could be quite cut up by it and feel guilty for the fact that I might have made the church miss out on a few £1,000 that the FIEC could have chucked our way. But I'm not. I don't, maybe you can tell that. I don't really feel guilty. It's just a mistake. I feel stupid. So I'm obviously being really humble by telling you. But it wasn't wrong. It was just a mistake. Just a mistake. And is God bothered by those? Not really. He wants me to do better. Write a better to-do list. Write more reminders in my phone. Tie more knots in my hanky. He wants me to get better. Don't get me wrong. But it's a mistake. It's a mistake. And he covers our mistakes. He isn't let down by us when we forget stuff. He isn't let down when we do something that we just had no control over, really. It just happened. It wasn't right, but it wasn't sin. And he covers those things. And so we don't need to worry. We don't need to worry about looking foolish in front of other people because our master doesn't make us look foolish. He isn't out there to laugh at us. He never laughs at us. He laughs at his enemies, not at his kids. He covers our mistakes. He even uses our sin. That doesn't justify it. Doesn't mean we do it anyway. But even when we do, not just make a mistake, we actually fall short. We actually do something that we shouldn't. In trying to invest, we make a wrong decision, make a wrong turning. We don't do what we should do. What does God do with that? Well, he's already forgiven it. Already forgiven it. It's not even that you need to take it back to him quickly and then he might. No, he has. Already. It's washed away. You're clean. And you're blameless. We sang that as well, didn't we? In royal robes. I don't deserve. Don't deserve them? Of course I don't. But I got them anyway. I got them. I'm clean. I'm pure. I'm holy. I'm accepted. I'm loved. And even when I stuff up my worst, God can use it. He can use it for the extension of his kingdom. Isn't that a mad, mad thing? He's in the business of covering our mistakes, our sin. And here's what else he does. He redefines what success is. He redefines what success is. So we think of success so much in the worldly way, don't we? We can't help but think of numbers. We can't help but count stuff and think, oh, if I've won this many people or seen this many people to my group or I've done this or done that in terms of the achievement of it, oh, I must have been a success. And that is wrong, isn't it? Not wrong that we seek numbers. We'd love every single chair in this room to be filled twice over, wouldn't we? with people who genuinely love God and worship him. Of course we want that, but is that the definition of success? No, it isn't. Otherwise, for the Son of God, Jesus didn't do that great, did he? 120 people? You'd think he'd get a few more than that, right? Isaiah, Jeremiah, Noah. Did they do great, get loads of big numbers? No, most people ignored them. Most people didn't listen to them. God redefines what success is. And actually, success is being faithful. Being faithful is success. Whatever the results, whatever comes out the other end, whatever it looks like, we pray for, we hope for, we believe for big things. We do want numbers. We want stuff to happen. But if it doesn't, is he going to turn around to us and say, get out? No. If we've done what he called us to do, he's going to say, well done, good and faithful servant. And I really think so often we see things wrong. We don't see things clearly. We think that big numbers means big success. And we forget that I think sometimes it's harder. It takes more faith to serve God in a tiny little dying church than it does in a mega church. I reckon that's the truth. Again, we can't judge, we can't see, but I reckon that's often the truth. Our God redefines what it means to be successful. What he wants from us isn't for us to change the world necessarily. It's just for us to trust him. And that's what this all comes down to. And this, again, is redefining what success is. But the fact that this third servant didn't do what he was called to do because of his fear, it showed that the heart of the problem was how he viewed his master. And the heart of our problem is how we often view our master. What God wants from you is for you to trust him. It isn't for you to produce loads and loads of stuff. It isn't for you to be fruitful in the world's sense of doing loads and loads of things. He doesn't need you to have a CV this long with all of the achievements that you have made. Do you know what he wants most? Is that you trust him. So you trust him. That you see him as the good, perfect, kind, compassionate master that he is. And as you do that, that will enable you to launch out. Just to go for it. Just to do stuff that may seem stupid in your mind, but you say, Lord, because of you, because I trust you, because you're faithful, because you're not going to let me sink even when I take my eyes off you, because you are the one who's going to help me walk on water, because of who you are, I'm going to do whatever it is that you give me to do. That's what matters. Not that we do the most, achieve the most, accomplish the most, but that we trust God as best we are able to do. Shall we pray? Lord, thank you for your word to us again this morning. And I just cry out to you that you'd help us. Help us to understand the things that we've read today. Help us never understand this as just a call to get out there and do stuff and then you'll be happy with us. That isn't the sum total of what this is. You are calling us to get out there. You are calling us to be faithful. You are calling us to do stuff for you, to not waste the time and the resources that you've given to us in this world. You're calling us to that, and that is a serious thing. But most of all, you're calling us to trust you, whether it works or whether it doesn't, whether we see thousands of people saved or none, whether we see great crowds or just a handful. You're calling us to trust you and to be faithful. So Lord, help us do that. Help us see that you're not a harsh, unkind master. You're not there with your whip waiting to beat us when we take a wrong turning and mess stuff up. You love us more than we'll ever understand. And because of that, you want us to be fruitful. You want us to launch out and to live this life that you've given us for you, as we sang so clearly this morning. So, Father, help us. Help us that we'd see who you are clearly, that you give us faith to trust you, humility to know that we need your help to do all of this, and then help us launch out. And who knows? it's exciting to think what could come from this church as a result of us just simply being faithful. So much good's already been done through your people here. Lord, continue to use us. Continue, above all else, to glorify yourself through as we pray. For we ask all of these things in Jesus' name. Amen. Cool. Stay for tea and coffee.